Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
We're talking markets, weather, ag labor, and corn export quality here today on AOA. Thanks for joining us on the program. Great to have you along for another conversation about issues impacting farming, ranching, and rural America. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Coming up here on our program today, we're going to talk markets in just a moment with Darren Newsom, Senior Market Analyst at Bar Chart. In segment two, we've seen some wild and wacky weather the last few days. Everything from snow and heavy rain and wind, etc., across much of the Midwest and Plains. John Baranek, DTN meteorologist, going to join us for an update here in segment two. After the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a conversation about ag labor. We're going to learn more about Canada's programs and some of their challenges and how it correlates to some of the challenges here in the U.S. Ken Forth with Farms is going to join us for a conversation. And then at the end of the show, we are going to get some details on the new corn export cargo quality report that's out from the U.S. Grains Council. Alexander Grabois, Manager of Global Strategies and Trade for U.S. Grains Council, is going to join us for a conversation coming up at the end of today's program. Well, let's dive into what's going on in the markets as we get going with the final week of March. Joining us now, Darren Newsom, Senior Market Analyst at Bar Chart. Darren, thanks for joining us here as we prepare for the final few rounds here in the month of March in the market trade.
Yeah, good morning to you, Jesse. Appreciate you having me on again. And yeah, there's a lot going on this week, as we know. But one thing that I don't think is going to get mentioned a lot or talked about a lot is it's the end of the financial quarter for a lot of the investment firms. And, you know, with the positions that they hold in the various commodities, particularly in some of the grains, you know, it kind of sheds a little bit of light on the continued liquidation and just getting out of some of these markets that we've seen over the last number of weeks.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I know a lot of folks are going to focus on the USDA reports coming up on Thursday, but end of the month always and end of the quarter can always lend itself to some added volatility in these markets as you see all this various positioning and money getting, you know, moved around, et cetera, et cetera. So that can a lot of times in itself creates some volatility and amplifies certain moves in markets, grains, livestock, commodities, outside markets, you name it. There could be a lot that goes into an end of the quarter type of situation.
There certainly is. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I don't base anything overly dramatic on them, but I certainly look at the latest weekly CFTC commitments traders reports. And particularly, again, in the grains sector, it was interesting this past Friday where almost across the board, we saw, well, but particularly in corn and soybeans, we saw decreases of the net short futures position. But it wasn't because we've seen all this new buying in the market in both categories, in their longs and shorts. They were decreasing those. They were just decreasing more shorts than they were long. So basically, it just looks like an exodus or a flow of money out of some of these major grain markets into other markets, into other sectors. We can certainly talk about the softs, you know, the way cocoa has exploded, just the latest example of a soft market on fire. And then, you know, we can start as we head into the next quarter, you know, where is this money going to go? We've seen huge moves in equities. We've still got some commodities showing bullish fundamentals. So, you know, where is this market going to go once we get into the next quarter?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Cocoa has exploded. Palm oil has been on fire for the most part. You know, energies. I mean, crude spent time back above 82. We set those all-time highs in the stocks here last week. I mean, there's outside of the traditional corn, soybean, wheat conversation, there's been a lot going on here recently, Darren.
There really is. And, you know, the cocoa has really been in the spotlight. I know I put a piece together for Bar Chart last week, but it went above $9,000 per metric ton here overnight through early Monday morning. I mean, it's just an absolutely incredible run. To me, it's a typical short supply squeeze. So this tells me there's it's probably not going to be all that long lived here once we get to the next harvest. But the problem is the bulk of global production comes from West Africa. And right now they're going through a very hot period, much more so than usual. And so not only does it have last year's production in question, it's starting to raise questions about this year's production. So we'll have to see how all this plays out, how long, you know, folks are going to continue to push. They're going to continue to buy into this cocoa market, because that really seems to be the market everybody wants to focus on at this point.
Yeah, no, it's it's always interesting to take a look at some of these other markets like mm-hmm. a cocoa, et cetera, just to see how some of the money flow is going around the world. And you look back at corn, beans, and wheat, for instance, and largely those markets have kind of gone sideways to some degree yeah. here as we get into this final week of the month. You know, the soy complex in particular has been above 12 much of last week, then kind of faded mm-hmm. off that. I mean, it's just, it feels to me, and then corn too really has gone sideways here as of late, Darren.
Yeah, we've got this non-commercial short covering going on. And on the other side, we've got commercial pressure. Well, why are we having commercial pressure? Because we don't have bullish fundamentals. We don't have bullish enough fundamentals to support the kind of rally that's being caused by funds getting out of their short position. So it's, as you said, it basically leads to this equilibrium where the markets just don't move very far. And there's really no reason at this point to get overly excited about anything. We're heading into planting season. We can look at the radar maps. It'll be interesting to hear again what John has to say. I love the way you described it as wild and wacky weather. It's certainly going to be fitting here. You know, we've got this big system moving across the U.S. right now. Is this going to be the trend of the spring? And if so, you know, what does this mean not only for soil moisture but possible planting, you know, as we get into April and early May?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting watching the wheat markets this week. I'm a little bit, you know, watching there with cold temps in the plain states, Kansas, Oklahoma. What could that do for HRW wheat here? How much of an impact? So I guess that coupled with everything, you know, going on overseas in the Black Sea, right. That continues to keep some focus for me on what's happening in the wheat markets.
Yeah, that certainly seemed to be the case overnight through Monday morning. I think we saw the algorithms fed in, you know, those headlines about the bombing at a Moscow concert hall over the weekend. And so we saw a big bump, a big jump in the Chicago market, particularly in the old crop. It doesn't change global supply and demand at all. I mean, the global supply and demand situation has pretty much figured out, has pretty much redealt the cards. And the U.S. still looks to be left holding nothing. So it hasn't changed supply and demand at all. As you said, you know, the focus is going to be now on new crop, what these cold temperatures mean. And at this point, both the July-September future spreads for Chicago and Kansas City are indicating commercial traders continue to sell. They're not overly concerned about the crop. They're not overly concerned about potential production losses. It's just way too early in the game.
Darren, 30 seconds on cattle. Looks mm-hmm. like that even though we got a placements number at 110% on Friday's on feed report, it looks like that's pretty much factored into this cattle trade so far.
Yeah, you know, we could watch what was going on in February when the placements and marketings were actually occurring. And I think the biggest thing was we saw lower marketings and we could see that in the cash markets and boxed beef and in the way the Fed futures were acting last month.
Darren Newsom, Senior Market Analyst at Bar Chart. Darren, always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us on AOA today.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Jesse.
All right. Coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Cenex Premium Lubricants. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll get an update on the weather with DTN's John Baranek. He's up next on AOA.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, You'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your car donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. When the temperature goes down, so can your equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel Fuel is built with a balanced additive package to keep equipment moving. Learn more online. Just go to cenex.com. Well, that temperature went down for some folks here the last few days, and that led to some pretty heavy snow in parts of the country, parts of the plains and the Midwest here across the country, getting some decent snow showers and some blizzard conditions, heavy rain as well. So let's take a look at things and get an update on the weather. Joining us now, DTN meteorologist John Baranek is with us. And John, man, oh man, kind of been wild and wacky weather here for the last couple of days, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Jesse. I mean, we had this storm system move through the western states on Saturday. Brought some pretty good showers out there, but man, it really developed here in the plains on Sunday. And we saw at least a good fetch off the Gulf of Mexico, really drawing up that moisture, as spring storms are typical to do. But it led to some really hefty snow across portions of the upper Midwest and Dakotas here on Sunday. Some of these areas got, you know, and it's hard to measure with how strong these winds were, how wet the snow is. It keeps compacting. And then some areas changed over to rain, like where I'm at around Minneapolis. We changed over to rain last night, and, you know, the weather service is saying we got 8 inches of snow. Then if I were to put a ruler out there, I'd say it's probably 2 or 3 just because of the rain that's come in and melted it or compacted it and everything else. So lots of moisture around here. We've seen a lot of the plains change over to some snow here from the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma up through Nebraska and eastern Dakotas. And that continues here for today. And this whole storm system still roaring. We've got all day today and all day tomorrow to be dealing with it. The East Coast will see it on Wednesday. But not to the same degree we see here in the middle of the country. But you know, when we add it all together, I mean, it's a lot of really good moisture for areas that really need it. That's, I think, the big takeaway here. You know, just looking at what we've seen over the last, you know, 24, 36 hours. I mean, we're looking at most of eastern Nebraska, western Iowa, southeast South Dakota, and southern Minnesota saw, you know, 1 to 2 inches of liquid equivalent. If whether it came in snow or rain. And that's just readily going to soak into those soils, and they just desperately need it.
I was going to ask, you know, I know this is going to be really good moisture. Folks who are seeing snow probably don't want to see the snow, but I can't imagine it's going to last too terribly long. And I guess that was the big thing I was wondering, is how much of this is going to make it into the ground at some of these dry areas. Could we, you know, end up with some mud and compaction from some of this, et cetera? I guess that was the big thing I was wondering about. But overall, this just feels like a very timely type of weather event to get us some much needed moisture, John.
Yeah, Jesse, it like a lot of things in weather, it kind of just depends on where you're at and what your conditions are going to be here for the next few days. But, you know, if you're in like Nebraska southward, all that snow is going to melt pretty quickly and get into the soil moisture column. So that'll be good. You know, areas up around me, around Minnesota and the Dakotas, where we stay cold here for the next couple of days, that snow is not going to melt, you know, too quickly. Especially later this week, we probably get another shot of some colder temperatures moving in kind of over the weekend. So that probably leaves the snow melt on the slower side. But I mean, these soils were not, they were not frozen when this snow started coming in. So they're kind of melting from below. And then as long as we get some sun, we can melt it from above, even if temperatures don't get above freezing here. So, you know, all of this is just going to be good. I think, in my opinion, at least, all this moisture is going to be good for these areas of the country that get it. And when we're not done yet, I mean, we're in a pretty active pattern here for the end of March and going into early April as well. We've got another couple of systems moving through. We'll see about one that happens late this week and weekend. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen on that because models don't have really a clue either. But this could mean some at least decent showers across the northern tier of the country. And then we look at kind of early next week, system goes into California on Easter, and then across the southern tier of the country early next week. And that does look like that'll build in some at least for now on the forecast, building in some good precipitation there in the southwestern plains, which have a little bit of snow for today, but overall not a whole lot of actual moisture falling from the current storm. This one that comes up early next week does follow a pretty favorable storm track to get some good moisture there into like western Kansas and then the panhandles to really help out that wheat that might be damaged from some colder temperatures here over the next couple of mornings.
Yeah, hopefully we don't see too much damage from some cold temps here that you're indicating. And looking ahead to that Easter weekend, of course, we'll see what happens with these storm systems. And I guess, you know, kind of looking into the month of April, you mentioned that active pattern. Is this something that potentially we might have to be concerned with not giving us some decent planting windows, or what are you kind of seeing right now, John, on some of those longer range models right now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, location and timing is going to be everything, right, Jesse, with some of these storm systems. And so, I mean, the pattern still looks active, you know, through at least the first half of April. We'll see if that really has a big, you know, impact on some areas across the South that would probably want to start planting a little early here through the front half of April. You know, as we look kind of farther north, we're kind of looking at, you know, later April and into May for the, you know, the main growing period or the main planting period. And that kind of looks like a time period where we might kind of switch off this active pattern. So we might get lucky here where we build in the soil moisture here over the next couple of weeks. Hopefully we get some good soil moisture across a lot of areas, and then we turn conditions around that would be a lot more favorable for planting here for the second half of April going into May. No guarantees on that. I mean, we all know how spring weather goes. We're already seeing kind of some ups and downs and some wild weather going on. You know, just because the pattern may look a little bit more docile at the end of April doesn't mean that we might not get some significant storm to move through during that period, or some, you know, some front that hangs up and you know, thunderstorms just develop along it and kind of flood things out. We don't know those specifics yet, but you know, the second half of April into May does look like a pretty good period to get out and do some field work. And that's kind of coming at the right time. Hopefully we have that soil moisture in place when that happens.
Hopefully we definitely do. Hopefully we do. And that's the case that we're going to be watching for here in the next few weeks. We're talking with DTM meteorologist John Baranek here on AOA today. John, let's look at South America real quick. Looking at Brazil and Argentina, how are things down south? I know that safrinha crop's been getting some beneficial rainfall, it sounds like, the last couple of days.
It has. They saw a front move up through Argentina and southern Brazil and kind of park itself in central Brazil, right where that safrinha crop is. And we've seen just kind of scattered showers and thunderstorms basically being consistent and constant along that front over the weekend, and probably sticking around here through tomorrow or Wednesday as well before that kind of breaks up a little bit. We still have showers that'll continue in that area through the weekend, and you know, models are forecasting into next week as well. So we'll see if they can really build in some subsoil moisture, because they've been lacking in that area. And it's not hitting all the safrinha corn. It's probably 2/3 of it though. So it's a really good hit of moisture for areas that really need it. And have had a really disappointing wet season so far. So, you know, honestly, that's not what we want to hear up in the U.S., that, you know, they're getting some better conditions down there for their corn. But, you know, that just kind of tends to be the reality. But, you know, it's while they're getting some good weather now, those wet season rains are going to shut down here, you know, over the course of the next month. And they're going to be reliant upon that subsoil moisture. So if they don't really build in a whole lot of it over this next week or maybe two, they're going to be in trouble still. And even some of those areas down in southern Brazil aren't looking great with their subsoil moisture either. That's kind of gone the other way from the wetter conditions we saw at the turn of the calendar year. So, you know, things are can still go wrong for them down there in Brazil. Argentina is kind of on the backside of their system. A lot of their corn and soybeans are filling. They've started harvest. And, you know, they've got pretty good conditions. They had some areas that were a little too wet last week, and they'll get a chance to dry out this week. It's going to be a rather dry week for the most part. But then we'll see a front move through this weekend for them, and then go into southern Brazil with a bit of showers too, and kind of start up a little bit more of an active period again, I think, going into early April. So, I mean, if you put everything on the whole, there are still some concerns out there for both countries. But for the most part here, we're in pretty good shape.
Well, John, always appreciate the time and thoughts on the weather outlook for the week ahead and beyond. And I know folks can stay up to date with his latest forecast at dtnpf.com. John Baranek, DTN meteorologist, thanks for joining us here on AOA today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, Jesse.
All right. Coming up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease created equal. Cenex Premium Grease is made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. We're going to have a conversation with Ken Forth, president of Ford Agricultural Resource Management Services, otherwise known as FARMS, about ag labor between Canada and the U.S. That's next on AOA.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of markets for the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra. The U.S. Department of Agriculture will release its quarterly grain stocks and planting intentions survey results Thursday at noon Eastern Time. These reports are known for their surprises, especially the stocks reports. Even so, the reports tend to refocus the markets on the supply and demand for fundamentals for the upcoming Northern Hemisphere growing season. Managed money continues to slowly transition away from its massive short positions in the grains and oilseed complex as we head to the period of elevated weather risks, along with rising risks of reinflation. The Federal Reserve painted a rosy picture of a no-landing scenario last week, suggesting increased demand for commodities as well as elevated risks for reinflation. Good rains continue to fall over center and west Brazil, that winter corn-producing area this week, although forecasters continue to point to elevated risks of dry weather during next month's pollination. We should very quickly know over the next few weeks whether we're going to see another big corn crop in Brazil, a very short crop, or something in between. The focus will then shift to the U.S. Midwest growing season. Soil profiles remain deficient in moisture across much of the Midwest, but the current weather pattern should dramatically improve the outlook over the next couple of weeks. It'll then come down to prospects for heat and dryness in the Midwest this summer. Those risks would appear to be elevated for the coming summer, although still below the 50% odds. The key to watching will be sea surface temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska and the region stretching from the Baja of California to Hawaii. Abnormally cool conditions in those areas this summer would mimic conditions seen during some of our bigger Midwest droughts, while warmer temperatures in those regions historically argue for big yields in the Midwest. Normal yields this year would be expected to increase supplies, while short crops would be expected to necessitate some demand rationing. I'm Jody Heemstra.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I pushed through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. Find your nearest Cenex location and trust your local experts there, or you can visit them online for more information. Just go to cenex.com. Well, right now, we want to talk about ag labor. The U.S., of course, having plenty of challenges when it comes to ag labor. We want to look north of the border and see how the situation is in Canada and talk about some of the similarities and differences maybe between the two countries. Joining us now for a conversation, he is the president of Ford Agricultural Resource Management Services, otherwise known as FARMS. Ken Forth is with us here today on AOA. Ken, thanks for joining us. I hope you're doing well.
Doing fine, Jesse. We're good to be here.
Well, let's just start, Ken, and maybe talk to me a little bit about farm labor and the outlook and the situation currently in Canada. I know there's a little bit better situation, it sounds like, north of the border, but give us your perspective on how seasonal worker programs and ag labor and more is looking right now in Canada.
Yeah, currently we're pretty good, especially in the fruit and vegetable industry. We bring in about 40,000 foreign workers on the seasonal agriculture worker program, about 20,000 of them in Ontario that we administer, and then we administer Atlantic Canada too. We do not do much in the West. But we've been able to make that program work for the fruit and vegetable and nursery industry for about, well, farms have been in business for 37 years, but the whole seasonal worker program has been in place since 1966. And it's grown, well, it started out with 264 people, and now it's at around 40,000 nationwide. It works really well. It really does help the fruit and vegetable industry. It has to be noted that we do hire Canadians. I mean, lots of Canadians are equipment operators and supervisors and that, but I can tell you that those people are getting thinner and thinner every day because they're usually older folks, and they're retiring, and there's not a lot of people to take their place. There's a lot of field work on farms. I got to say that probably about 40,000 Canadians in Ontario, but that's just not enough when you need armies of people to pick fruit and vegetables. And so this program has worked really well for that much time. You know, the average stays about 24 weeks. They can stay for 8 months. And some people are, some of us farmers are doing that, staying for 8 months because we grow crops so that we can space out the costs of this thing. But it's working right now. But I have to tell you, there's studies out there that will tell us that by 2030, we'll be 100,000 people short in agriculture across Canada. Hmm. And that's a significant number. Whether that ever happens or not, I don't know. But that's what the studies say right now.
That is a very, very large number. And I should ask, Ken, sure. You know, thinking about, you mentioned how, you know, you guys do hire folks who are Canadian citizens, but then bring in some of this supplemental labor, I would say, and seasonal labor. Where are a lot of the folks who are coming through that seasonal ag worker program? Where are they coming from? What countries are they coming from?
About 60% of them come from Mexico. And the rest come from various Caribbean countries that are under the agreement. Jamaica is the biggest. And then we have Trinidad, Tobago, Barbados, and the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, which is about seven other islands, small islands. So that's where they all come from.
Okay. Okay. Now, you mentioned how long this program has been around and how long Farms, of course, has been around, going on almost 40 years, and the Seasonal Ag Worker Program, 58 years. I mean, your thoughts, how has this worked so well for so long? Because you look at the U.S. and we have considerable challenges. A lot of our farmers say that ag labor and the cost of ag labor is their number one concern on their operations. So you compare the two, and one has to wonder, what are you guys doing in Canada that has worked so well for so long?
Well, we're not doing a lot different. I mean, you folks are worried about the cost of it. So are we. It's a significant cost, and it's risen every year, and will continue to do that until, if commodity prices don't change, we will be not in great shape on that. There's some commodities the odd person drops out of this program because they can't afford it. Cost is the number one problem with this. As far as the program itself, we've been able to show that we have a shortage of workers. Like we just plain do not have the population that you do. And there's just not enough people to work on these farms. Big reason is because you can't survive working at a seasonal job in your country or my country. You just can't. But these folks from Mexico and the Caribbean see an opportunity in that to come up here for 7 or 8 months and change their way of life down there. They see the opportunity where a Canadian, he can't work 6 months a year and survive buying houses and education and all that. I wish we could. That'd be nice to work six months a year, but we can't do that. We can't do that here. And you can't do that there either.
No, we cannot. So, we cannot. It's a tough situation, and I'm no immigration expert by any means. So one has to wonder if it's an immigration, a broader immigration issue. I would like to probably think it is here in the U.S., maybe not in Canada, but it feels like that there's some bigger challenges here in the U.S. compared to, you know, what you guys have been able to do in Canada when it comes to seasonal ag workers, Ken.
Well, I can't comment on what your challenges are down there. I know the cost is a challenge everywhere, but
yeah.
As far as that's concerned, like we have a very stringent way that we have to order our workers. And it's kind of like, you know, we have to fill out a labor market assessment, every year, submit it to Service Canada. They approve you or don't approve you. They always approve us lately because there's just nobody here to do the job. But it's still a process you have to go through. You have to give them free housing that's government inspected by your local Ministry of Health. And you have to pay half of the airfare. It's a whole thing. The reason farms started basically was to make it easier for the farm community to do it. Prior to that, prior to the early 80s, the government would send your order to the Ministry of Labor in Jamaica. Well, they refused to do that after 1985, and they came to us and said, we're not going to do that anymore. And we said, well, you can't cancel the program. And they said, we're not going to cancel it. You do it. So we set up a company that's a nonprofit company that's owned by the commodity groups that organize things between like a farmer can submit his labor market impact assessment to us. So we make sure it's perfect before it goes to Service Canada. And they say 99.5% of them go there without a problem because, you know, you can understand that any government document, if you haven't filled out every box and ticked everything on it, they'll send it back to you. So we put that service in place. And then from then on, when it comes back from Service Canada, we contact the ministries of labor in those countries to arrange for the workers when the farmer needs it. And we're moving workers from the first working day of January for greenhouse, and that we've got 3,000 or 4,000 people here now, up until probably into the September for apples, and all along the way people are also going home. So we're moving a lot of folks all the time. We go to the point of having we have our own travel agency, and we have staff in the airport at Pearson Airport in Toronto behind the scenes, passed through by Canadian Border Services to help the workers get through customs really quickly. And we put them on buses, or there'll be farmers waiting for them at the exit of the airport. We're full service. We do everything. And so it makes it easier for farmers, because you can imagine with 1,200 farmers that we have, trying to contact a Ministry of Labor office in one of those foreign countries, it would tie things up greatly. Mm-hmm. So they go through us. We don't charge very much at all. And that's what we do. And it makes it easier for everyone.
FarmsOntario.ca for more information on farms. And Ken, before we let you go here real quick, you mentioned this earlier, how a lot of folks, a lot of Canadians are retiring and you're having to supplement with foreign ag workers. Is that a case of the younger generation maybe isn't interested in getting involved in seasonal jobs or agriculture, things like that? Or is that not necessarily a trend, Ken?
Well, I don't think it's a trend. I think it's a fact, because those young people, they don't want to work, all of them. There's some that want to get a career in agriculture, but most of them, there's some pretty nice jobs up here that are 12 months a year, and they have a career and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Agriculture, as you know, is pretty weird, because, you know, we're weather related, we're commodity based related, we're price related, we're cost related. It doesn't make it for a very stable thing where a young person can go and work for a big company and have a good career there.
No, I would agree with you.
If you want to know more about this program, like, go to the Farms Ontario website, and if you look at a link called Parallel World, that'll tell you about how the workers are treated and how they feel about this. You go to the Fruit and Vegetable Growers of Canada, they have a link on their website that is called Heartbeat. It's a 30-minute video about this program. And the Farm and Food Care in Ontario also have a series of small videos called More Than a Migrant Worker. And they interview migrant workers from every kind of farm that we have. And it's we put that in the news too. So we try to give the perspective of what this really means to the general public, because we do have people out here. We do have groups out here who just want to, you know, they're negative on anything and they want to squash the program. So those are the kind of things that we do to make sure that the general public knows how these workers are treated. And they are treated very well, because we have so much oversight from ministries of health, ministries of labor, Service Canada. They can come in and audit us at any time on the bookkeeping, on the housing, on the way they're just plain treated. So we're under a microscope up here all the time. And if you don't go by the rules, you won't be in the program. That's kind of the way it works.
Very insightful conversation. Again, farmsontario.ca. Ken Forth, president of Foreign Agricultural Resource Management Services, known as Farms. Ken, thanks for joining us here on AOA today. We'll get you back on the show again in the future.
Anytime. You just give me a call. See you soon.
All right, up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Lubricants. Learn more at cenex.com. We're going to talk with the manager of global strategies and trade with the U.S. Grains Council, Alexander Grabois. He joins us next here on AOA.
Farm Farming is dangerous. There's dangers all around us. We work around it and we live around it every day. And we just become desensitized to what's around us.
We go through safety training and, you know, we try and do these things to make sure accidents don't happen, but you just never know.
There are so many farmers that I think take for granted all of the underground utilities that are there.
You don't want to hit a gas pipe because that's your life. The other part of it is if you hit certain things, you're liable for it.
I mean, we kind of know what's out here, but all at the same time, you just always call.
FarmSafe 811 starts with you. Whether you're installing drain tile or doing any sort of digging, always call 811 and wait for any underground lines to be marked and have the depth confirmed. That's farming with care. But if a line does get damaged, go somewhere safe and call 911.
Always keep safety in the back of your mind. Just stay humble.
For more information, go to farmsafe811.org.
A promise is potent, born of intention, fueled by commitment. It's seeing things through, always showing up. And we know a thing or two about promises here at Susan G. Komen. Over 40 years ago, we locked arms with you toward one vision, a world without breast cancer. By investing in life-saving research and standing up for patient rights, we are shifting the system so all people everywhere get the care they deserve. Because if you've just been diagnosed and don't know where to turn, we've got you. If you can't afford the treatment you need, we've got you. And if you are driven to raise money to honor the best friend you've just lost, we have a place for you here. Because of you, we're supporting those who need help today while tirelessly searching for tomorrow's cures. Ending breast cancer needs all of us. Visit Komen.org and be a part of the Susan G. Komen community today.
Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, as we discuss how cooperatives support farmers and ranchers and build strong communities. Each week, we'll chat with voices from throughout the cooperative system. From global market access to local expertise, we'll explore how co-op ownership means you own a world of opportunities. Tune in on Tuesdays or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
When news happens in agriculture, or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms, and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us the first Wednesday of every month on AOA for the latest episode of The Monthly Grind with our friends at the National Corn Growers Association. We'll discuss the latest topics surrounding the corn industry, the relationships between corn and other parts of the agricultural supply chain, the newest initiatives and partnerships from NCGA's Market Development Action Team, and much more. That's the first Wednesday of every month for The Monthly Grind on AOA. It's a show you don't want to miss.
keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. Downtime is a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more online. Just go to cenex.com. Again, trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location here today. Well, joining us now, we want to take a look at the latest corn export cargo quality report out from the U.S. Grains Council. Here to share some details with us, he is joining us now on the phone. He is the manager of global strategies and trade for the U.S. Grains Council. Alexander Grabois is with us. And Alexander, thanks for joining us here on AOA. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very much looking forward to speaking about this report with you.
Yeah, and I know this report is something that the U.S. Grains Council puts out routinely. And just for starters, kind of give us some of the big details of what we found in the 23-24 Corn Export Cargo Quality Report.
Of course. So for context, for maybe some of the listeners that have not been as familiar, the U.S. Grains Council, we do two reports per year, the export or the harvest quality report, and then we do the export cargo quality report, which just recently came out. And what we aim to do is take samples. In the case of this report, we took them from export elevators in the Southern Rail, the Gulf, and the Pacific Northwest. And within the samples, we found that this year, for example, one of the points that we wanted to highlight was that there was lower BCFM than the five-year average. And this is very similar to data we found at harvest. And what we've seen is that it can be attributed to the reduced need for artificial heat drying processes this year because it was a drier season and the weather was more favorable. So that did reduce one potential leg of grain handling. We did find that the lowest BCFM rates were in the Southern Rail export catchment area, but they were still low in the Gulf and PNW. And 85% of the 433 samples that we tested fell within the requirements needed to be graded as U.S. number two corn, which is also, which speaks very highly to the levels being favorable.
And I was going to say, I know those high ratings that we saw on this report, that kind of comes back around to speak to the quality, of course, of U.S. corn. And that is huge for a lot of our overseas buyers, isn't it, Alexander?
Correct. And some of the more commonly requested specifications are U.S. number two and U.S. number three corn. And most of the samples that we tested fell within those parameters. So I think that definitely speaks to the continued quality that we saw in the harvest report. And I think the reduced need for artificial drying that I mentioned with BCFM also played a role as we saw higher test weights, which is also an indicator of a good quality crop. And that also led to lower total damage. And similar to last year, there was no heat damage, but that does speak positively to good grain storage management as well as grain handling throughout the system in the U.S. from harvest to export.
Yeah, and you mentioned, looking at those test weights and the protein concentration as well, and all the samples that you guys take in for this report, again, from around the country, it's amazing to me to think about that, 85% is considered to be, right in line with, number two corn. I just think that is so, it's great to see, I guess, would be the best way I could put this. It's great to see for not only our growers, but our export partners and more. And that's, speaks to the importance of reports like this one from the U.S. Grains Council.
Of course, yes. And I think when we speak about that 85%, that's also just 85% on the BCFM parameters. And that it is very important that we see that. And what we like to do with this report, we feel that a big part of its value is showing the ability to trace and also report. I think it's important for our international end users as well as our producers to really see how it progresses throughout the system. So it can help answer any questions and also help be an indicator. We've been doing this report for over a decade now. So it does allow for tracking and maybe being able to help understand why, let's say, conditions might be better one year than another. And it really gives us a good set of resources to continue to build relationships with the producers as well as with customers worldwide.
Well, Alexander, with your role as manager of global strategies and trade for the U.S. Grains Council, you know, thinking about this report and other work that the Grains Council does, what are some things that you are focused on with your role as we go through 2024? What are some things that you want growers listening in to think about and know that you guys are doing at the U.S. Grains Council this year?
Of course. So at the Grains Council, one of our biggest roles is to continue market development and really reach customers worldwide. And some of the things that we've been working on, especially as it pertains to corn, is helping highlight and identify competitive advantages that U.S. corn has over its competitors. We understand that price is, in many cases, a deciding factor for buyers, but we also want to show that U.S. corn does provide benefits over competitors that maybe even could be a deciding factor besides price. So, for example, when we talk about starch, many cases starch has similar starch contents between origins, but U.S. corn, because it's softer endosperm, it breaks down easier. So that can mean it's more digestible and more starch can be extractable. So for many industries, using U.S. corn can help increase profitability and efficiency. So we want to really help bridge that gap and really make sure that our international customers are aware of the benefits that our products present.
Well, Alexander, final thoughts. If folks want to read the full harvest quality report or stay up to date with the latest that's going on with U.S. Grains Council, I'm sure they could find all that more online, can't they?
Yes. Our website is www.grains.org. And if anybody is interested, they're welcome to read the full report as well as some of the other studies and projects that we work on. And if there are any questions, they're happy to reach out.
grains.org for more information. And we have been talking with Alexander Grabois, manager of global strategies and trade for the U.S. Grains Council. And Alexander, thanks for joining us here today on AOA. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a great day.
All right. Once again, great stuff there with the U.S. Grains Council. The 23-24 corn export cargo quality report is out now. We're out of time on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly. Use high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. I'm Jesse Allen. Thanks for listening to AOA. Have a great rest of your day.
Young farmers don't listen to the radio, right? Wrong. In a recent survey, 74% of young producers said they get their most important agricultural information from their trusted farm radio station. Surprised? Don't be. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Radio is the perfect companion because it goes with you everywhere. Whether you're in the shop, on the combine, or in the truck, farm radio is right there with you. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Trains are everywhere. You should always expect one, even on private property. Only cross tracks at designated crossings that fit your equipment. If you don't fit, don't commit. Whatever you're operating, secure your load, raise your equipment, and avoid getting stuck or causing damage. Minimize distractions. Remember, noisy equipment drowns out the sound of a train. Unless you're crossing, always keep a safe distance from train tracks. Look, listen, live. For more info, go to oli.org.
Hi, I'm Jenny Garth. I've loved and cared for rescue animals since I was a little girl growing up on a farm in Illinois. My pets have always been some of the most important members of my family. My friends at American Humane have been helping animals for over 140 years. Adopting an animal in need can help save a life and add a new member to your family. Since 1981, American Humane has celebrated Adopt a Dog Month each October in an effort to help the estimated 3 to 4 million animals waiting in shelters every year to get the loving forever home that they deserve. I urge you to consider fostering or adopting a shelter pet and to support the noble mission of American Humane. Together, we can make a significant difference in the lives of these loving creatures. For more information, please check out AmericanHumane.org.